Hello, everybody, and welcome to Power Play for January 10th. Thank you for joining us. A big day in Ottawa today as Prime Minister Justin Trudeau shuffles his cabinet and promotes a star player as Canada's top diplomat, Chrystia Freeland. Coming up, a complete breakdown of who's in and who is out. But the shuffle was not the only item on Trudeau's agenda. He also had a meeting today with the Congress of Aboriginal Peoples. We'll speak to the Congress's new chief ahead on the show. Also had Trump's cabinet picks grilled by the U.S. Senate during the first confirmation hearings. Were there any surprises? And what to expect from Barack Obama's farewell speech tonight in Chicago, the city where he gave his victory speeches in 2008 and 2012? But first, the Prime Minister shook up his cabinet today, the first major shuffle since the Liberals came into power just over a year ago.
2017 is going to be an important year of delivering on our mandate to grow the middle class and help those working hard to join it. A big part of it will be working with large economies around the world like China and the US. The team with me, along with our other cabinet colleagues, will lead that work of delivering for Canadians, and I'm pleased to introduce them to you today.
Prime Minister Justin Trudeau speaking with the media this afternoon. Joining me now to break down the shuffle for us, CTV's Ottawa Bureau Chief Joyce Napier. This was an exciting day for us. I sort of said it's our Super Bowl. Somebody said that that's a bit of an overstretch, but hey.
Just a bowl.
Walk us through this. What were the big surprises, Joyce?
Okay, well, I don't know if there were any really big surprises because the rumors had been, you know, kind of rampant since yesterday here in Ottawa, or anyway, for the last few days. But let's say the big name, the big change is in foreign affairs. You said it earlier. Chrystia Freeland leaves international trade and becomes Canada's top ambassador to the world. Why is that important? Because obviously the changes in Washington, Justin Trudeau must have had that in mind as well as other priorities. But those changes mean changes in Washington for Canada means there's got to be some changes in Canada. Chrystia Freeland then will leave international trade, but she will keep the whole U.S. file. That's one important thing to note. In other words, the NAFTA, the free trade agreement, if it has to be renegotiated, she will be the one piloting that file. She will be the one piloting the Canada-U.S. relations. So that's a very important portfolio for her.
And what does it say that she's able to keep that part of the portfolio and bring it with her into this new role? What does it say about the confidence that, that Mr. Trudeau has in her?
Well, it's obviously an enormous confidence he has in her. Also, important to note that in the last several weeks, she has participated in meetings with high-level Trump officials, his top aides, along with Justin Trudeau's top aides as well, his principal secretary, his chief of staff, among others, Canada's ambassador to the U.S., and she has been part of these meetings. So she is one of the faces for the new administration. She has been talking to them. They're trying to develop a rapport with this sort of mysterious administration, or unpredictable, if not mysterious. So important for her to stay there. Continuity is important right now because it is such an important relationship. It is our most important relationship, foreign relationship.
And walk us through some of the other big moves today.
Okay, well, replacing her international trade, we have François-Philippe Champagne. So perhaps it's a name that few Canadians know. He was the parliamentary secretary to the finance minister, a man with a big background in international trade, a trade lawyer, a businessman. So he's not a complete newbie, but a new face in cabinet. Another new face in cabinet is Ahmed Hussein. He becomes immigration minister, has a keen knowledge of Canada's immigration system, having been born in Somalia. He arrived in Canada at the age of 16 as a refugee, has a keen understanding of that file, becomes Canada's new immigration minister. The mystery is, where will Stéphane Dion, the former foreign affairs minister, go? Will he go? Will he become Canada's ambassador to Europe? Will he be in Germany? Will he be in France? He was offered a top diplomatic posting, and he's thinking about it. A very key position there, too. Canada just renegotiated CETA, just brought it to the finish line. That's the Canada-EU free trade deal. Very important deal for Canada's economy. So will he be Canada's front man in Europe? That's left to be seen, but that's the job that he was offered. Also, Robert McCollum leaves immigration, and he will go to China as Canada's ambassador. also there. Very important, key foreign posting for Canada.
And John McCallum is a senior member as well.
A senior member of cabinet, leaving cabinet. He's the second one leaving cabinet today. But an important posting in China, an important for Justin Trudeau. They are starting talks for a possible free trade deal with China. And Robert McCallum will be the front man on that. So, two people leaving cabinet, but three is a charm. That's Marianne Mihaljczyk, who leaves cabinet to go back to caucus. So I guess in all these people, she is the one with the real demotion.
All right, Joyce, thanks so much for bringing us up to speed and clarifying all that for us. Let's bring in right now Jeff Norquay from Ernst Cliff Strategy Group and former advisor to Brian Mulroney, as well as joining him, Penny Colonnette, former director of appointments for Jean Chrétien, currently adjunct law professor at the University of Ottawa. Welcome to you both. I just want to pick up a little bit on what Joyce was saying earlier, the importance of having somebody like the former Foreign Affairs Minister Stéphane Dion in a post in Europe. You tweeted today, Penny, you said that his letter was very elegant. How do you think that he will perform in a diplomatic role in Europe, which is obviously of huge importance to Canada right now?
Well, I'm not sure he's agreed to it yet, so I think we better see that.
If he does.
Because his statement said that he was actually going to leave politics. So you mentioned earlier that he's taking his time, and I think he should take his time. He's had a long time in politics. He's had some really tough files, the environment, Quebec, federalism. So this man deserves some time to think about things. If he does decide to accept the European postings, a little odd, two ambassadorial postings. I've never seen that before, so it would be very important. If he does, I'm sure he'll acquit himself really well.
Were there any surprises as you were watching this shuffle today? Did anything stand out for you?
Well, one thing that surprised me was how, and Joyce could perhaps talk to this, how everything was leaked out this morning, and then and then we had the event at Rideau Hall. Usually, all you guys go to Rideau Hall, and you say, "Oh, look who's coming, and look who's not coming."
We pretty much knew before
it all happened.
So I don't know if that was deliberate or whether it just happened because the news was leaking out. It was interesting, though.
And Jeff, as you were watching today, is there anything that sort of caught you off guard? I mean, Penny was just talking about the fact that everything was pretty much leaked before the ceremony took place at Rideau Hall at 2 p.m. But in terms of the shuffles, is there anything that stood out for you?
Well, I think it was really a very, very well-planned and well-thought-out shuffle. I think the PM and his closest advisors had two or three really key objectives in mind here. First, I think they wanted to present a much stronger and more focused foreign affairs and international trade team on their two big, most important bilateral files, Canada, U.S. and China. Don't forget China. Very important in this. Chrystia Freeland is very much on side with the PM's approach to China, obviously sending a senior former cabinet minister now, John McCallum. Very important message to the Chinese.
And we should add, Chrystia Freeland more on side than Dion appeared to be.
Absolutely. I think the second thing that the PM was trying to do today was lower the age of cabinet. The average age of the three ministers leaving is 62. The average age of the other ministers moved or promoted today is 41. Big message there. Message to a caucus group of, 183, 185, that there is hope for you. And even though we got those old guys in cabinet, they will move out, there will be changes, and there's an opportunity.
But are there risks to that? I mean, Penny, when you look at somebody like Maria Monsef, for example, who many people say bungled her portfolio. She's obviously young. I think she's in her mid-30s, being replaced by Carina Gould, who I believe is 29 years old.
Right.
Given how much of an issue this file has become, would it perhaps have made more sense to put somebody who's more senior in that post to navigate the waters ahead? This was a pledge to make this last election, the first election, using first past the post. It looks increasingly like that will not happen. So should it have been somebody older in that portfolio?
No, I don't think so at all. And Carina in particular has a master's in international relations. She's a fantastic person. She'll be great there. I do disagree a little bit with Jeff on, you know, the need for shuffles. I mean, shuffles are a disruption to the system. We all have to do them in government. You try not to do them too much. I mean, there's a lot of angst that goes into a shuffle, both in PMO staff, with the Prime Minister, who, I don't know about you, but my former prime minister was never in a very good mood when a shuffle was taking place. And within the system itself, within the civil servants and the bureaucrats. So you don't want to be doing it too much. Yes, certain points were made today. We've made the gender point. The age point, maybe. But I think the experience, too, by having McCallum in China and perhaps having Dion in Europe, it also speaks volumes here. And we know that Mr. Trudeau has been reaching out to former ambassadors, former senior people for advice on the Trump administration. So, I mean, the age thing, there's a balance there.
In fairness, though, you know, there's another reason for doing cabinet shuffles, and that is, frankly, to deal with problems. Mr. Dion wasn't the best at playing nicely with others in terms of cabinet colleagues. He had some difficulties explaining difficult files publicly.
Do you think that's what motivated this decision, the fact that he was perceived as being prickly?
I think to a certain extent. Not the full story, but at least part of it. Marian Mihaichuk was a bit of a disaster in the employment job, which is a really difficult and challenging portfolio. And, you know, as we've been discussing, Ms. Monsef faced some real challenges in democratic institutions. The future of that whole file is, you know, is very interesting. My guess is that it's going to be quickly buried.
I also want to run a short clip right now of Ahmed Hussein, who becomes the new
graduate of the University of Ottawa Law School.
That's right.
Very proud of him. If we have that, let's pull that up right now.
So I think as members of parliament and members of the cabinet, each of us coming into public life are informed about, they're informed by their experiences, by their different experiences that they bring to the table. And mine is, I'm no different in that sense. I'll bring my experience as an immigrant to Canada, but also as an immigration lawyer, someone who worked many, many years before running for office as a community activist, a community organizer, and a community advocate. So I will bring those experiences to the table as I take on this new challenge in my life.
Somali-Canadian came to Canada when he was 16 years old. Obviously, this comes at a time when Canada has welcomed so many Syrians into this country. What message does that send to have somebody like Ahmed Hussein in this portfolio specifically?
Well, he's hugely inspirational, I think, for a lot of people. For all of us, actually. Very, very inspirational. And I wish him the best of luck. That is a tough, tough portfolio for anyone. And he's going to be a new minister with, you know, there's going to be a lot of tugs and pulls at him.
And why do you say tough, Penny? Because is it because now begins the process of Syrians adapting to Canadian life and all the challenges that go along
with that? Immigration has traditionally been a very tough portfolio for everyone. And it's one that can take you down sometimes, and it's one that can also lift you up. So he's got a tough road ahead of him, but he looks like a terrific guy. He's got a wonderful reputation in Toronto. And as I said, pretty inspirational story. And a new Ottawa graduate.
Yeah, he's a really amazing Canadian, Somali-Canadian, to put it correctly, success story. Came here at 16, 2 degrees, created the Residence Council in Regent Park where he first lived, president, I think, of the Canadian Somali Association, worked in Dalton McGuinty's office, key organizer for Mr. Trudeau in Toronto and in the last election. That's an awful lot to accomplish within 20 years of coming to Canada.
So if there was one person to watch now this year with this new cabinet, who do you think will be the one to watch, Penny?
I have to be in cabinet?
In cabinet, yeah.
I'd say Mr. Hussein.
Mr. Hussein.
I'll say Chrystia Freeland. You know, she is the top gun now in not only foreign affairs, but also Canada-U.S. relations, China, the two biggest files, bilateral files we have. She's going to have a chance to deal with Mr. Trump and whatever comes forward from the United States, to deal with the trouble spots in the world, with Russia, with Africa, all of those issues, Europe. It's a big, big load on her plate.
Lots to take on, but she's proven that she can certainly handle a lot as well. So we'll be watching closely. Thank you to you both. Great chat.
You're welcome.
Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Well, as we mentioned, we also learned today that John McCallum, former immigration minister, will be Canada's new ambassador to China, a critical role that's been vacant now for 3 months and comes at a time when Canada is exploring trade talks with Beijing. Joining me now is Guy Saint-Jacques, who was Canada's most recent ambassador to China. Mr. Saint-Jacques, thank you for coming on today. Appreciate it.
A great pleasure, Mr. Sajidina.
Why is it significant to have somebody like John McCallum, who is a political appointee, in that post? What message do you think Mr. Trudeau is trying to send Beijing here?
Well, I would say first that it's a very timely nomination because as China is our second most important relationship in the world, it's a position that you cannot leave empty for very long. And I think that the Chinese will welcome the nomination of Mr. McCallum, who's a very experienced politician, has long been in politics, and it demonstrates the importance that Mr. Trudeau attached to the relationship. I would add also that Mr. McCallum will be able to rely on a very good team in Beijing and throughout our consulates in China.
I believe we have a clip of Mr. McCallum. Let's run that down, Mr. Saint-Jacques, and then I'll get your reaction to it.
For me, the close to 40,000 Syrian refugees was more a labor of the heart than the brain, although both were involved. And it made me particularly proud as a Canadian to see that in comparison to so many other countries in this world, Canadians were extremely welcoming to the refugees. And so I think by that fact alone, I would classify it as a success.
This was a huge challenge for Mr. McCallum, Mr. Saint-Jacques, to bring over thousands of Syrians into this country. And now he'll be stepping into a new challenge at a time when Donald Trump has basically said that he's looking at the possibility of slapping more tariffs on China, which could possibly open up doors for Canada. What do you think that relationship will be like after Mr. Trump gets in between Canada and China?
Well, obviously, this is something that will have to be watched. But I would say that Mr. McCallum is going at an opportune time because the relationship is, our bilateral relationship between Canada and China is in very good shape. Following the visit of Prime Minister Trudeau in late August, early September, and that of Premier Li Keqiang 2 weeks later, it established a framework for regular contacts that will enable us to have exchanges at high level, at the level of the Prime Minister, but also with regular dialogues between the Foreign Affairs Minister and also between the Finance Minister and the Chinese Vice Premier. Plus, there will be regular security discussions as well as on consular issues. So I think these venues will offer a great opportunity to discuss the state of the world. This is an important year for Xi Jinping, and of course, he will want as much stability on the international scene as possible. That's why we'll have to watch very closely the relationship with Mr. Trump. The Chinese are a bit perplexed and apprehensive about this relationship and how it will go. I think that Canada can play a role there to try to, between the two sides, and in fact, to try to explain to the Chinese where the Americans are coming from. Of course, there could be things that could impact on Canada as well, because we will have to watch the situation in the South China Sea and the relationship between the U.S. and Taiwan and how this could have an impact. But I think that Mr. McCallum will be able to navigate this very well. As I said earlier, for Xi Jinping, this is a key year. He needs stability. This year in October, you will have the 19th Party Congress of the party that will result in a major turnover at a high level in China. It will all include changes inside the party, changes in the ministries, change in governors. And I think that Mr. McCallum will want to establish a good rapport with these new leaders as soon as possible.
So just a few seconds left, but as somebody who occupied that post for 4 years, what piece of advice do you have for Mr. McCallum, and what was your greatest challenge when you were posted there?
Well, I would say one of the major challenges, of course, was to get the Chinese attention. And we went through a change of government, and that resulted in a major change in the bilateral relationship. As I said, we now have the framework in place to be able to move the relationship forward. There will always be challenges ahead. I'm thinking here about the restrictions on the freedom of expression that have come into place since the arrival of Xi Jinping as president of China. But I would say that the Mr. McCollum will be in a good position. He is known to be close to the prime minister and with his experience in cabinet. So I'm confident that he will be able to move the relationship ahead. And we, as I said, we have now the framework to be able to do that. So, and again, he has a great team that will be eager to work with him and to make his posting a big success.
Certainly a key post. Guy Saint-Jacques speaking to us from Montreal today. Thank you so much for your time, sir.
Thank you very much.
Well, tonight, President Obama gives his final address before Donald Trump assumes the Oval Office. After the break, we'll head to Washington to get you the latest on what we can expect on the speech. Stay with us. Welcome back. Just 10 days to go before Donald Trump is sworn in as the 45th president of the United States. But tonight, all eyes will be on the current president, Barack Obama, as he delivers his final farewell speech in the city where he declared victory in 2008 and 2012. CTV's Washington Bureau Chief Joy Malbin joins me now with a preview. He could be making this speech, Joy, in the Oval Office or the East Room, but he wants to be in Chicago. This really is a full circle moment, isn't it?
Yeah, back to where it all began, Omar, back to Chicago, where he was a community organizer, back to those heady days of hope and change in 2008. You know, expect a moment of reflection. Expect him to defend his legacy, because, of course, we know that Donald Trump has said that he would roll back many of the president's accomplishments, like Obamacare. You know, there will be a point of pride to say what they've accomplished. And you know, this is a tradition with presidents in the past to give a farewell speech, but many times presidents will also give a warning of the challenges ahead. It's also, his speech tonight is to motivate liberals and progressives who feel crushed after this election defeat to keep up the fight, to keep up the fight for democracy. So it won't be as long as the State of the Union, but certainly it will be what he wants people to remember him by.
Certainly should be a poignant and powerful moment. You know, speaking of his successor, Donald Trump, the U.S. Senate held the first of its confirmation hearings for Trump's cabinet picks today, who were all expected to get a huge grilling. How'd that go?
Well, you know, this is one of his most controversial picks. But the first senator to endorse Donald Trump was Senator Jeff Sessions from Alabama, longtime senator. But there have always been these allegations of racism back in the 80s. He was actually denied a judgeship because of statements that he had made. He denied being a racist, but he was given a tough grilling today. And it almost seemed like the senators wanted to put Donald Trump's policies on trial here, and not just Jeff Sessions. Things like, do you believe in a Muslim ban? And he said no. He had to explain Donald Trump's policies, that he would want extreme vetting to keep people out of the country who come from terrorist organizations. He also said something surprising, that if there is an investigation into Hillary Clinton, into her email scandals, that he would have to recuse himself, step away if he were appointed attorney general, perhaps a deputy or a special prosecutor, which begs the question, Donald Trump said he wasn't going to prosecute Clinton. Is there going to be an investigation? You never know.
Yeah, with him especially. As far as these confirmation hearings go, can the Democrats actually block a Trump pick?
No, they likely can't, but they can draw this out and make it very ugly. They would need Republicans to bolt to get the number of votes to block this. And it's very rare. Only 9 of these nominations have actually been blocked in the history of the U.S. 12 people have withdrawn. So it's unlikely. But Jeff Sessions has spent all day being grilled. He's going to be at it again tomorrow. And Senator Cory Booker, another senator, is actually going to testify against his colleague, Senator Jeff Sessions, again, claiming that this is not a man because of his background that we want to be Attorney General and head of the Justice Department.
So we talked about Obama's speech and also the confirmation hearings that are happening. But, of course, tomorrow is also a big day, if it happens. Trump's first full news conference expected, and that's happening for the first time in about 6 months. So quite huge. They're bound to get questions, I would think, Joy, about his conflict of interest and his son-in-law, questions about that as well. What are we expecting?
We expect anything with Donald Trump. As you said, we're not even sure it's going to happen, but it is set to take place in New York at Trump Tower at 11 o'clock in the morning. He's going to be asked several things. He has not given a press conference since July about the Russian hack, about intelligence, about conflict of interest. He was supposed to give a press conference early in this year to explain how he was going to divest himself from his business empire. How's he going to do that? There's a whole rash of questions. But, you know, there is some school of thought, too, that suggests that perhaps Donald Trump is having this big interview so that all eyes will be on him, ever the showman, and we won't be paying so much attention to some of these controversial confirmation hearings, including Jeff Sessions tomorrow and including Rex Tillerson, who, of course, many Democrats are upset about because of his close ties with Russia and Vladimir Putin.
So much going on, Joy. I don't know when you sleep. But you always break it down
Never.
For us. CTV's Joy Malvin, Washington Bureau Chief. Thanks so much, Joy. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Omar.
Well, the Prime Minister didn't just shuffle cabinet today. He also had meetings with high-level Indigenous leaders, and we hear from one of them right after the break on what the top Indigenous priorities will be this year. Big meeting today between the Prime Minister and the Indigenous Affairs Minister. They met with representatives from the Congress of Aboriginal Peoples today, the first of what will be annual meetings to convey key areas of concern for Canada's Indigenous communities. To see how those discussions went, Congress of Aboriginal Peoples Chair Robert Bertrand is joining me now. Great to have you on. Thank you for coming on.
Nice to be here.
Take me inside that room. How did that conversation go today?
Well, it was very interesting. My first time after being elected that I met with the Prime Minister. We touched on a lot of subjects that were it was dear to our hearts.
Such as
the Daniels decision, a very important decision that was handed down by the Supreme Court last April. CAP, with the help of the Indian and Northern Affairs, are organizing a very big Daniels Assembly in Ottawa here at the end of March. I believe it's the 20th and the 21st. And we will be inviting delegates from across Canada and also experts to find out exactly what Daniels actually means. If you remember the decision, the Supreme Court said that all Aboriginals now living off reserve, whether they be Métis or non-status or status, are now considered as Indians under 9124.
Hugely significant.
Very, very, very significant. But a lot of people don't know what that means legally and, you know, all the other stuff. So this is what we will be discussing on the 20th and the 21st.
When you hear the Prime Minister speak and when you hear the Indigenous Affairs Minister speak, they appear to be saying all the right things. You know, there are pledges to repair, what they will admit is a broken relationship between the federal government and Indigenous peoples. Are you seeing any signs of real change since the Liberals came into power?
Well, I think just the fact that he decided to meet with us, I think, is a big step forward. I listened to him this morning. He was, to me, he was very sincere, and I hope positive things will come out of of our meeting. One thing that I did mention to him was. Now, according to the figures that we have seen, there are over 70% of Aboriginal people now live off-reserve. So, you know, a lot of people have been questioning whether CAP has its place. But when we see that, when we see that 70% of Aboriginals live off-reserve, I say, yes, CAP has its place, and we have to take care of our constituents that are living off-reserve.
But at what point does an organization such as yourself say, look, you know, the government has been in power now, and, you know, while I hear you telling me that you're grateful for these conversations, the ability to have the FaceTime with the Prime Minister, at what point do these organizations say, look, it's time to action some of those promises?
I think they want to take action, but what has to be decided is what action are we going to take? With this Daniels decision, what does this encompass? Does it encompass health? Does it encompass education? I think that's why this Daniels assembly is so important, because I'm convinced that will guide us in the right direction.
A huge file and lots of issues to talk about. I thank you for coming on today.
It is my pleasure.
Well, coming up, one of Trudeau's brand new cabinet ministers is here to share her reaction on her appointment to the Democratic Institutions file. Please stay with us right here on Power Play. Returns after this short break. Welcome back. Today's Cabinet Shuffle saw a few new faces appointed to the front bench. One of those faces is Burlington, Ontario MP and now Democratic Institutions Minister Karina Gould, who joins me now in studio. Has that sunk in yet?
It's starting to sink in. So now that you've said it on national TV, it feels more real.
Take me back to the moment at Rideau Hall at 2 o'clock today. What was that like for you?
That was incredible. I mean, sitting there in front of the Governor General, in front of the Prime Minister with the Queen's portrait overlooking, and really recognizing that, you know, this is for Canada, right? That I get to really express the fullness of my citizenship in this moment. It was a pretty incredible and very honored moment.
You're only 29 years old, but everybody who, you know, has talked about you says that you're an up-and-comer. Obviously, you have the confidence of the Prime Minister, who made a decision by naming you to this post. But it's a challenging one because, as you know, your boss said that 2015 would be the last election that would be first past the post. Will he keep that promise?
Well, so, you know, I was appointed a couple of hours ago, right? So I'm waiting
to the questions start right away.
The questions start right away, but the briefings haven't started yet. So I'm looking forward to getting up to speed on the file. As you probably know, I was Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister of International Development before. So I'm really excited about turning my gaze inward to Canada and just so looking forward to really working on this file and doing something really good and really productive for the future of our country.
But as somebody who's part of caucus, obviously this was a file that got a lot of attention.
Yeah.
As did your predecessor, Maria Monsef. And so, you know, as somebody who's coming in, and I appreciate the fact that you're very new to the post, what do you think will be your greatest challenge?
Well, I mean, I think any new position is going to have challenges, right? But I think we've had a really robust national dialogue over the past year. And so now we're at a point where we've had those conversations. And so it's going to be my task to understand all of those, understand the different viewpoints, and really put something together that's going to work for all Canadians.
How does that work? I mean, what are the mechanics of becoming a cabinet minister? Are you presented with a big book right away? Or what happens for you to get up to speed on this file?
So I'm not sure, because I have never been in cabinet before. My understanding is that I will probably be meeting with the deputy minister, with the chief of staff, with officials in the department, and really kind of getting to know what the file is, and then, you know, getting up to speed, working on it, asking lots of questions. That's going to be probably my number one job over the coming days, weeks, is asking lots of questions, asking the right questions, and then seeing where we move.
What is your is there a big question right now in your mind that you're waiting to ask somebody?
I think one of the biggest questions will probably come once I've seen some of what the work has been done. But, you know, mydemocracy.ca is still open to the public, and so I'm really looking forward to seeing the results of that.
Did you take the survey?
I did, yeah.
And what did you get?
Oh my gosh, I think I was a cooperator.
A cooperator.
Yeah,
okay.
Which I isn't surprising to me, because I mean my general attitude is trying to bring people together to work out solutions and to do something that, you know, it's not going to satisfy everyone, but people will be part of the process and hopefully see a little bit of themselves reflected in it.
What did you think of the survey? Because a lot of people said it was strange. I took it. I found it strange. It didn't really, you know, ask specific questions on which system Canadians preferred, and yet it was presumably designed to do that. Yeah. What was your take as you were taking it?
You know, I think it was designed about values. And so I actually held a town hall, an electoral town hall, like most MPs or a lot of MPs did across the country. And one of the things that we discussed most was values. So before we could get to talking about systems, we were talking, and this was something that came up in my community discussion. We had over 100 people participate, and they were really saying, we want to discuss what the values are that we want in our system or that we already see in our system and what's important for us. And I think that's what the survey was really about. But as I said, I haven't really been part of the mechanics yet, so I'm really looking forward to kind of, you know, getting in there, getting into the weeds, sorting some things out, asking lots of questions, and then coming up with something to present to Canadians.
Okay, my last question, sure. And I'm kind of curious how all this behind-the-scenes stuff works.
Yeah.
When did you actually get the call, and who called you? Who told you that this would be your new job?
Very recently.
Like how recently?
Like over the weekend.
Over the weekend?
Yeah.
Okay, and who called you?
Someone from the Prime Minister's office.
Can you say who?
Yeah, well, there's a number of people who told me, so. But it was quite an exciting moment. I have to say that I wasn't anticipating this. I'm so honored and so excited to be part of Cabinet, to be part of this team, to be serving under the Prime Minister, and ultimately to be serving Canadians.
And interesting that this Cabinet has gone younger. You've got vets who are now out and who will be taking on presumably some big diplomatic posts,
yeah.
But it is a younger Cabinet now.
Yeah, although we will get older as well.
Yeah, so. Karina Gould, a great day for you. Congratulations to you. We're excited to see what you can do with the job.
Perfect.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me. Looking forward to it.
After the break, we convene the press gallery to get their thoughts on today's Cabinet Shuffle. Please stay with us. Welcome back. Let's bring in our Tuesday press gallery right now. Robert Fife is the Ottawa Bureau Chief for the Globe and Mail, and Christy Kirkup is a reporter with the Canadian Press. Huge day for you. I know a lot of excitement on the Hill. Bob, let me start with you. Everybody seems to be talking about Chrystia Freeland. She has been a star performer in Mr. Trudeau's cabinet. Her job just got tougher.
It got tougher and bigger. The responsibilities are enormous. I mean, he has taken all of the trade responsibilities that went from the trade minister and given her to deal with the United States. So she's not only responsible for all international affairs, she's responsible for any trade file, whether it's softwood lumber or the negotiation of the North American Free Trade Deal. But it's also really smart politics, because she did chair the Canada-US Cabinet Committee. She understands trade very well. She's very experienced in understanding the United States. And it's good to have somebody with her capabilities and who is already reaching out to the Trump people so that she can develop a positive relationship with them. Because as the Prime Minister says, this guy is all about trade. When he talks about trade, it's usually protectionism. So we have to have our very best people in charge of that and dealing with the Americans. I think he made a really, really good choice.
Clinching CETA, the deal with the Europeans, how important was that in terms of raising her profile? Because it seemed there for a few days that it could really go either way because of the Walloons.
That's right. There was this situation that unfolded really at the 11th hour, and the minister was credited with really being able to cement that agreement that was able to be reached. And so I think that's one of the many reasons, as Bob outlined, that we're seeing the fact that she received this promotion today, the fact that, again, she is fluent in Russian, for example. She has
five languages.
That's right. You know, that she has considerable contacts in the United States, specifically from her experience as an economic journalist. And again, if you're dealing with the unpredictable Donald Trump, and I think that's really going to be the biggest challenge for this government. I mean, how many contingency plans do you come up with when you deal with a president who could be governing by tweet, right? You need someone who has that bench strength that is able to kind of, you know, kind of maneuver themselves and to kind of roll with the punches. And definitely they're anticipating that Chrystia Freeland's going to be able to do that.
Well, we have a problem here potentially with Russia.
I was just going to ask you about that.
You know, she's banned from Russia. She's Ukrainian, of Ukrainian descent. Her mother actually rewrote Ukraine's constitution, her late mother. And she's no friend of Vladimir Putin. She worked for 4 years in Russia. She's written books critical of the plutocrats who steal and the oligarchs who steal from the Russian people. So that it's going to be a problem for her, particularly if you've got President Donald Trump,
who says, hey, I like this guy, Putin,
right? So that's potentially going to be a problem for her. And I also say this is because there's a strong movement inside the Liberal caucus and with the support of the NDP and the Conservatives, of which she privately has supported, bringing in a Magnitsky-type, U.S.-style Magnitsky Act, which would punish Russian human rights abusers. And I don't know how that would go over well with Trump or not, but that's the one area we're going to have to watch very carefully, is how she manages the relations with Russia. I mean, she is fluent in Russia. She's very capable, but something we're going to have to watch.
Were there any surprises for you? And not surprises in terms of the names themselves, because it seemed like everything was leaked before it actually happened at 2 p.m. today. But in terms of the actual choices, the youth of this cabinet, the fact that you've got the vets in this cabinet, presumably headed for diplomatic posts. Is there anything that stood out for you, Bob?
Well, I think it shows that Mr. Trudeau does want to get rid of the old veterans. This is about generational change, that, you know, people who are in their 30s or 40s, it's their time to sort of govern. And if you've been around for a longer period of time, chances are you're not going to be in cabinet. You know, in terms of John McCallum, it was a great appointment to China. We are going to begin trade negotiations with them, exploratory trade negotiations. But Stéphane Dion, as we all know, is in a big pout. He was offered a very good job as an ambassador to the United Nations to work on this whole European Union, to be able to work with this new free trade deal we're getting. And he's sitting at home deciding whether he's going to do it or not. So, but that's very typical of Mr. Dion. He can be very prickly.
But go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, in terms of the surprises, of course, we had learned the news that Stéphane Dion was going to be moved out, of course, in order to give way for Chrystia Freeland. But I didn't really anticipate that he was going to put out a statement that was kind of so frank in its nature, essentially saying that he was done with political life, and almost kind of like a thank God that's not the only thing.
It's your choice. You want to pick Chrystia Freeland.
Yes. So, you know, it was a bit of...
The last line of that was interesting, too, right? He said something to the effect of, I'm renewable, I have a lot of energy. It was a strangely worded statement.
Yeah, I think it reflects a bit of sour grapes. And I think that maybe, again, beyond just, again, having Freeland move into the post of foreign affairs, you have Stéphane Dion, who has really been a critical part of the Liberal Party, kind of saying that, you know, he's moving on from political life. He doesn't seem happy about that. I think that's actually a really significant aspect of this story. And the fact that, again, maybe it reflects the fact that the Prime Minister was, you know, ready and willing to make a decision that maybe was actually going to hurt someone that he's been quite close to.
But he can be a tough guy. I mean, he's ready to say to these people, look, I don't want you in cabinet anymore. I'll give you something else, but you're not going to be in cabinet anymore. He fired Marianne Maychuk, and he demoted Monsef. So he's given her another chance to see if she can perform. But it's, you know, we're expecting another bigger reset cabinet in the summer before we come back with a throne speech. If I'm not performing very well in this cabinet, I'd be worried. I'd get my game up.
You'd have to up your game.
Because I, you know, he's not, he isn't afraid to fire people or demote people. I mean, he's got a lot of his father in him like that.
Maria Monsef was asked today whether she considered this new position a demotion, and she said something to the effect of, I'll let the Canadians decide. Replacing her with somebody who is also quite young, she's 29, Corina Gould, great person, it seems like, but she's got a tough file ahead of her as well because the Liberals made a campaign promise and it seems increasingly like they won't be able to keep that. How challenging will her new post be, Carina Gould?
I think it's going to be pretty tough. I kind of felt sorry for her in terms of her sitting here doing the interview with you. I know she's really excited to be in cabinet, yeah. But at the end of the day, I think she's going to be on the receiving end of a lot of questions from the press gallery specifically because, again, the Prime Minister reiterated today, again, 2015 will be the last election under First Past the Post. We've heard from the chief electoral officer, TikTok, time's running out in order to get this job done. It's becoming increasingly clear that this is going to be an incredible challenge for the government.
So should that post have gone to somebody more senior, you think, Bob?
Well, if you are serious about making the kind of changes that the Prime Minister said he was, yes, you would go to somebody more experienced. But I think they're going to come up with something, but I don't see how they can make the significant electoral change that they promised in the time frame that we're talking about. But doesn't mean that they can't come up with some other ideas that then they can window dress it for the Canadian people. And I expect that perhaps because they're putting somebody so young in this position, maybe they're going to have to do something in terms of youth voting. I don't know. We'll see.
And just a few seconds to wrap up, Ahmed Hussein, new immigration minister, yeah. Just got a few seconds left. It's quite symbolic to have somebody like him in that
position. He's a Somali refugee. It's a story of Canada, right? People come in from Canada, and next thing you know, they're very senior positions in government, and it's one of the things we all love about our country.
All right. We'll be watching this closely. Thanks so much to both of you. Appreciate it. And that's it for today's Political Power Plays. Thank you for watching the broadcast and listening on our podcast. Here's how you can reach us with your reactions and ideas. We're back tomorrow with all the big moves from Parliament Hill across the country and around the world. Hope you can join us then at this time on CTV News Channel. Scott Laurie is standing by with the latest news headlines. Have a good evening.